Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
The Anzac Round so gets set for 5 consecutive days of footy, starting Wednesday night with Melbourne and Richmond and stretching through to Sunday evening with the Hawks and Swans. Hello, I'm Andy Belez and this is the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. On today's show, the Bombers have a big problem and a small problem in the shape of Sam Draper and Darcy Parrish. And North are in historical territory with how poor they've been over the last 5 years. We'll catch up with Sam Landsberger to talk about that. And Harley Reid is the talk of the footy world right now, so what's the latest on his contract talks? I'll talk to John Ralph about that and the latest on Tarryn Thomas's future in footy coming up. But right now, here's Sam. Here on the Herald Sun Footy Podcast, we're joined by Sam Landsberger. G'day, Sam.
Thanks for having me, Andy. 2 weeks in a row, I must have done something right last week.
Absolutely. Well, you're a lock as long as you want to stay. The Bombers. You wrote today online at theheraldsun.com.au. Went online this morning about the Bombers and two of their pretty well-known stars and how they might not find themselves in the team for Anzac Day, Darcy Parrish and Sam Draper.
Yeah, I said there's a big problem at Essendon and a smaller problem at Essendon. The big problem is Sam Draper. The smaller problem is Darcy Parrish. Oh, look, I think they will be in the team for Anzac Day. Brad Scott said on Monday they hadn't discussed team selection yet, but he said Draper was a vital player to their team. So I suspect he is safe, and I'd be surprised if they dropped Parrish this week. But I think they're definitely two players on notice. So Draper's been used predominantly as a forward in Peter Wright's absence. He's had no impact on the scoreboard. So they've targeted him inside 50 17 times this season. Wow. He's not kicked a goal from any of those entries. In fact, he's the only player, I think, for the top tip from the top 50 targets inside 50 this season, he's the only player not to kick a goal from those entries. So it's not working as a forward. Now, clearly, Todd Goldstein is the number one ruckman. They're getting more bang for buck when Goldie's in the middle. And so with Peter Wright coming back, I think the fair question was, well, will they drop Draper? Scott said basically they wouldn't. So the question now is whether do they give Goldie a rest, which I think would be a little bit cruel, given he's really carried them the last couple of weeks in the ruck. I think he's been magnificent. Or do they back in all three? And that would be reverting to the default setup. They didn't go with that in round one when Draper was underdone, but they did play all three in round two against Sydney, albeit Draper was substituted out of that match. So the way it looks at the moment, I think they roll with all three on Anzac Day and bring Peter Wright back in. He's a certainty to play. But it's just one to watch throughout the year because I think Goldstein is definitely the number one ruckman. And so where that leaves Sam Draper and whether they're two top heavy playing those three big men plus Nick Cox at 200 centimetres, I think it's a really – it's an interesting discussion, but it's probably a healthy problem to have at the same time.
It is, but I mean – start of the year, I know Draper had been injured, but at the start of the year to think that that 36-year-old Todd Goldstein, 350 games under his belt, is going to displace one of the highest rated young ruckman in the competition. I mean, it's quite amazing.
Yeah, they love the energy and the sort of the ferocity Draper brings. He obviously adds a bit of theatre as well. We saw him mimicking that sort of dive on the ball after the final siren on Friday night. So, you know, he's an energising player. But look, the move forward for him hasn't worked. He's not a forward. I think we've seen that. He's clearly a ruckman. And so how they fit two into one is going to be interesting to see. Parrish is the one I'm more interested in because he's fallen off a cliff this year. I know he had a hamstring on the eve of the season, but his numbers have just fallen away so badly. Like he's down 25% for disposals, I think 50% for metres gained, 60% for clearances, and down 45% for score involved. So he's basically a shadow of what he produced last year. And we've seen Sam Durham particularly and Jai Caldwell go into the midfield and totally transform that midfield. Their defensive weapons, they bring Grant, particularly Durham, and they've been critical to their last two wins, which have really set the fire for the season. And Parrish has been squeezed out. He's been a bench player. In fact, I spoke to Champion Data yesterday. Of all midfielders that have played at least three games this year, Parrish is the fourth worst-rated midfielder in the AFL. And the three beneath him, Jack McRae, Jai Clark, and Henry Huswright, they're only beneath him because they've played as a substitute.
Yep.
So if they played full game time minutes, it's probable that Darcy Parrish would be the worst ranked midfielder in the VFL. Now, when you've got him out of form, and then you've got Archie Perkins and Will Sedefield slowly coming back from injury, and then Dylan Scheel on full game time minutes in the VFL on Saturday. Again, I just think this is one to watch. I mean, they've signed Parrish for 6 years, but if his form continues the way it is, and Perkins and Sedefield and Scheel return, I'll be very fascinated to see whether he remains a lock in this team. It's amazing, given he was the Anzac Day medalist 3 years ago. He won every medal that year in 2021. He was an All-Australian, but he's certainly not at that peak form right now.
Could we see him in the subs vest?
I don't think he's a sub vest type player. My gut feel right now, as we speak on Tuesday, is that Peter Wright will come in.
Mm-hmm.
I think Dylan Scheel is a sneaky chance to come in, but I suspect it'll just be the one change. And then Sardis will miss out, and then either Nick Hind or Davey would roll into the sub vest. So that's how I see it playing out. I don't think Darcy is the right sort of player for the sub. You know, not a huge tank, not a burst player. Whereas if you put a Dave, you're a Hind into the game, they're probably going to give you a bit more energy, but I could be wrong. We'll see on Thursday.
And Hind has played in the sub role a few times. Yeah, when we talk about Todd Goldstein, this would probably become the largest crowd he's ever played in, quite possibly, in a career that's gone for well over a decade, coming from North Melbourne into an Anzac Day clash at the, you know, in some of the best form that he's ever been in, playing in front of 95,000, he'd be, you know, this would get him excited.
That's a great point. I might actually have a quick look and see if we can find that. It's a really good point. Would he have ever played in more? I'm trying to think of the big finals he played in.
He played in a few prelims under Brad Scott.
Yeah, were they were in the state though, weren't they?
Yeah, I reckon you might be right.
So I reckon he might have played the Bombers in front of a big crowd in an elimination final one year, but this would certainly top that, you think. It's a really good point.
Mm.
In fact, I've got it here. He's played in front of 90,000 once, and that was in 2015 in that elimination final against Richmond. Okay. So if we get 91,000 on Thursday, it's officially the biggest crowd. That's the only time he's played in front of more than 78,000. So it's going to blow that out of the park. That's a great pickup by you.
And it would be very cruel in that if he were rested this weekend.
Yes. He deserves to play that blockbuster game. Come on, Scotty, back in the old fella.
Hey, Sam, we're going to take a break. We'll come back after this.
I'm Andrew Rule, the host of the podcast A Life in Crimes. Here are some of the things that we've been talking about the last few weeks. The brutal truth is that when you start looking at it, they always kill or injure a lot more than each other.
The professional hitman used to be a professional hitman.
Evil strikes in all forms, but particularly as stupidity. Life and Crimes is available wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with Sam Landsberger. We were just talking Essendon, but Sam, at the other end of the spectrum is North Melbourne.
Mm.
Now, you're working on a big read, pulling together a whole lot of stuff for the weekend with Mark Robinson, but you've been deep diving into some historical stats and that show that North are historically bad.
We are. Look, their 5-year stretch at the moment is the worst in modern history. So, look, there's so many numbers you can pull out there at the moment, but this is just one for you. Since 2017, they've won 12 games in out of 90. That's a 13% win strike rate. Now, there was a St Kilda team in the early 1980s which won 4 wooden spoons, and they had a better success rate. They won 17% of games. So historically, this is as bad as we've seen. There's so many numbers that jump off the page with North Melbourne. They've won just 3/4 for the year. Now, 2 of those were in the first half against Fremantle, where they looked like a real good chance to cause an upset.
Yep.
But basically, in 6 games of footy, they've had 1 half. So the 3rd quarter they won, was by a couple of points in the 3rd quarter against Brisbane. That was junk time. The game was dead and buried. I looked at the coaches' votes last night. North Melbourne as a club has polled 18 votes. Isaac Heaney has 47 votes. It's just staggering. Like, that's incredible. There are 22 players who have individually polled more coaches' votes than North Melbourne as a club this year. I mean, for me, like, they've just brought so many players in and out of this football club in the past decade, and it hasn't worked. I mean, for me, I think the last really good move they made in the off-season was in 2014. They brought in Sean Higgins and Jared Waite, I think, as free agents. They were both spectacular for the club. Since then, they've brought 95 players through the door.
Wow.
I think it's a fairly low number of ticks you would give those players. So, yeah, look, there are so many threads to pull on this. I mean, I was debating yesterday with someone, well, if they had their time again, would they, like right now, if you were North Melbourne, would you trade Colby McKercher and Zane Durst for Harley Reid?
Well, you would, but if you put Harley Reid into the current North Melbourne team, is he as impactful as he is in the West Coast team?
And that's the exact answer I got from some clubs yesterday. So North Melbourne, everyone talks about tanking. Should they have tanked that round 24 game last year to get the number one pick? Well, they probably had a second chance to get him. I mean, if they'd put 2 and 3 on the table, that probably would have got the deal done for West Coast. There might have been some shuffles or some swapping of later picks as well. But again, to your point, yeah, Clods was saying to me yesterday, well, you know, if Harley Reid was at North Melbourne right now, it might not be the Harley Reid we are seeing explode for West Coast, because they've got a bit of a habit of spoiling talent. So is it, you know, is it the environment? Is it the culture? Was it the decision to sack those club legends in Boomer Harvey and Michael Ferrito and Drew Petrie and Nick Del Santo, who was another one of those good pickups back in the day in 2016. I mean, they haven't looked like it since that moment in time. Was that the flashpoint? It's a mess at the moment. I think it's quite sad. I think the TAB has them $7 not to win a game for the season. I mean, who would have thought that? That's, you know, incredible. With the great coach Alistair Clarkson at the helm. I know last year was probably a mulligan for him. You know, he missed a lot of the season through circumstances out of his control. And, you know, it's an absolute mess. And it's hard to see light at the end of the tunnel.
Mm. It seems like this sort of situation, when you look back in recent history and even further back, it happens once a decade. We're talking about, you know, Melbourne 10 years ago, we're in a similar position, or a little longer. Before that, it was Carlton 10 years before that. Before that, it was Fitzroy. Is this North Melbourne team and the way they've performed in the last 5 years, I don't think it's as good as any of those teams were. And then you go back to St Kilda in the 80s, again, win percentage says a lot. I want to go back even further.
This is great by you. Well, what have you got here?
University, I mean, modern footy fans may not know, but like the historians of the game, amateur historians of the game, know that University played for 7 seasons from 1908, came in at the same time as Richmond. This is Melbourne University. That was an amalgamation of the Blues and the Blacks. The First World War crueled it, and that's why it went out of the competition. But was in the competition for 7 years, won 2 games in its final 4 years, and still had a better win percentage than the last 5 years of North Melbourne.
So University, what year was this?
We're talking 08 to 1914.
1908 to 1914, that team had a better success rate than Alistair Clarkson's Kangaroos, albeit we're talking about the pre-Clarko era as well.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, look, I mean, the one win from the past 27 games, and that's the win that cost you Harley Reid. Look, it's a real miss. The path forward is interesting for me. Like, what do they do? Like, they're so far behind every other club sort of in, you know, that is like for like. So I think it's going to be tough for them. It'd be fascinating to see what levers they pull, because it's just not working.
And North Melbourne fans, you know, you can try and, you know, protect yourself by saying, well, we play good teams. You're not expecting to be good teams. But when you play 17th, on the weekend and don't even look like it, that's when the real worry sets in.
Mm. And Clarko, clearly the Messiah coach, you know, he's got 4 premierships to his name. His legacy, I think, is assured. But when does the honeymoon period end with North Melbourne fans? I mean, David King said something pretty stunning on the weekend. I mean, he's a North Melbourne great, and I think he basically said, well, if it's going to take 4 years to work out the defensive system, well, maybe he's not your man. So he sort of put the heat on the coach a little bit as well. It's a fascinating space. I think, You know, I think Kane Corn showed some damning vision on Monday night of Luke Davies, Uniacke sort of going to sleep at the back line. I think if you're a supporter, all you want right now is effort.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have the cattle, but you want your players to rock up and for 2 hours every Saturday, give everything they've got. And right now, they're not doing that. And I think if they can at least do that, the supporters will go home saying, well, at least I had a crack. And I don't think that's much to ask.
Oh, absolutely not. Sam Landsberger, watch this space. It'll be a big read with Robbo on the weekend. Thanks for your time.
Stay tuned. Thanks for having me, Andy.
He's the talk of football. Harley Reid, number one draft pick last year. John Ralph, g'day.
Pay him $6 million. Pay
$6 million?
$15 million.
Oh, my goodness.
Pay him $20 million. Geez, the hot take industry has been very hot this week, hasn't it? It's exciting to watch. That's the best thing about footy. You see these superstars who exit the game. You go, how do we get the next superstar coming through? And then he just does that and just blows your mind.
It's funny, isn't it? Like last year, this time last year, he was the number one draft pick by a long way.
Yep.
And then, of course, the conversation starts. Is he that good? He can't be that good. You know, is he worth, you know, giving up picks two and three to get pick one? No, he's not. But he's shown. It's a small sample size, six games, but he looks pretty good.
Yeah, and the thing I would say is that every recruiter said, like, he's going to be a star at some stage, but they all said he's played for six different clubs across 2023. He hasn't built a tank yet. He hasn't had continuity. So he'll do some exciting things as forward of centre. So what blew my mind was the fact that he was able to do that, those three goals, those contested marks, but also the, you know, the fierce, explosive breakaway speed in the midfield. He's done it to Dusty. He's done it to Fife. He's going to do it to everyone. Who's he got? Matty Rowell coming up. Can he do it to Matty Rowell? That would be the ultimate test of those things. So, yeah, we just love talking about him because, you know what? We get into this industry, Andy, to be excited about football. It turns into reports and it turns into contract dramas, but he's the purity of football, going along to watching a bloke who takes your breath away.
It's funny. 2 weeks ago we were talking about will the West Coast win a game, and now we're talking about, well, where's the ceiling for West Coast? You know, they've got this kid and from a point where last year it was, would he say no to going to Western Australia?
Yep.
He's having a good time. He might even look to extend.
No doubt. So Josh Barnes wrote a great article in the preseason. So for all the doomsdays about, you know, he's going to bugger off as quickly as he can, he said West Coast just don't lose players. Now, that has been because of success previously, but it's also because they get into legal, let's call it off-the-plan deals, and they have great, you know, media deals as well for players who wouldn't normally get a contract across here. But it's also just because they create a really good culture. So that culture finally is improving. Now, I think probably 6 weeks ago, even 2 weeks ago, the feel was let's wait 12 months. He's got a mandatory 3-year deal. I still think there's a time eventually where 6 or 8 years he'll do a Chris Judd and come back. But they were saying, no, hold off because he hasn't got the form on the board and he wants to keep his options open. I think now he's open to a contract extension. Everyone heard Don Pike, the new West Coast chief executive, saying we're working behind the scenes. So the feeling now is that he would sign for a 4th year. So only one extra year, none of the $10 million 5-year deals that people like Lee Matthews are talking about. But that's a massive shift, even in a couple of weeks. So I wouldn't be surprised if within the next month he gets a deal of, say, $1 million for that 4th season. It gives him some security, some financial security. Heaven forbid if anything terrible happened. But it also doesn't lock him in too far down the track. And then maybe he could do a 2-year deal again at some stage, closer to the end of that 4th year. That gives him 6 years there. Then he can say, I want to win a premiership with this mob, or I want to give my team 15 first-round picks when I decide to go back home. So there is this weird clause that I've written about in the Herald Sun on Tuesday. So it's basically clubs, if they feel their players aren't being paid enough, they can ask for the AFL to appoint an arbitrator. So in your first, second or third year, if your mandatory first, second or third year wage is so out of whack with what you should be earning, well, you approach the AFL, they appoint an arbitrator, within 21 days, they make a decision and they can say, yes, we think Harley Reid should be on $1 million in his 2nd year. Now the club can accept that and put a new standard player contract to him, or he can go into the draft. So that's there for player managers to say, my bloke's been screwed. My point is, why wouldn't West Coast say, hey, this is the ultimate show of faith. We think this bloke is being criminally underpaid. As a show of faith to him, to show him how loyal we want to be in him, we want to pay him more. Now, that's unprecedented. It's never been used as a clause, but it's basically there because of restraint of trade. The only other thing that they can do, as Jay Clark spoke about on Sunday, is this, you can pay a player a marketing bonus in his 3rd year. So that's the ASA, Additional Services Agreement. Now, that's $1.267 million. So right now they'd be splitting that up between, you know, half a dozen of their players, Oscar Allen and Tim Kelly and whoever it might be. What they could do is pay him a lot of that. And so I asked the AFLPA, they said you could pay him the whole lot. Now, clearly they'd have to, you know, pay those other players in different ways, but they've got so much cap space they could say, righto, Tim Kelly, we're just going to pay you a bigger salary this year. We're going to take that money out of your ASA and we're going to give it to Harley. So there's lots of ways in which they can reward this kid, but let's bottom line it. He's having fun. He's loving being there. And I think that, you know, that we'll get a contract extension for a fourth season in the short-term future.
And let's put it how it is. He's 18 years old and he's still making a pretty good amount of money to do what he loves.
No doubt. And you know what? So he should be top five in their best and fairest. For him to get really good money in his second year, he'd have to win the Brownlow, be a rising star, win the best and fairest. So all those things would have a multiplying effect and his base salary would be $310,000 next year and then he'd get match payments.
Yep.
So anyway, even if he gets $280,000, $350,000 next year, Paul Connors and co, they tuck it away and they know unless he does something catastrophic, he will never want for money across his career. They can get him all the marketing stuff he wants. So let's face it, Harley Reid and family are never going to go poor.
Hey, Ralphie, let's move on to Taron Thomas. What's the latest?
So he does want to play football again next year, and I think there is a pathway back for him. I know it's a really complicated path. I just want to put it on the record myself. I would love it if the AFL had said to him, we want you to go and play in a state league for the entirety of 2025. Mm-hmm. You know, we feel like the sins that you have committed are such that we don't believe that – we believe we have to show you contrite for a whole season. That's not what they've done. They've given him an 18-week ban. They've allowed him to play state league football if he passes the personal behaviour tests, the personal development tests. So he will – he's starting a fitness training program. He wants to play. He wants to train with a state league club for coming weeks. Now, the AFL says he still has to have approval just to even train with a club. But, you know, I think he's resolute. He feels like he's improving. We all need to see it. I think we need to hear it from him. You know, I think, you know, he almost probably needs to play state league for a, you know, club, whether it's a Port Melbourne or a Williamstown or somewhere in the SANFL. But, you know, rather than saying, okay, my career's done, I've been given multiple chances by the Roos and now it's over. He's 24. There are clubs out there that would be interested in him. Geelong, you know, threw it up. We're open. I think right now they're saying, hang on, we've never had a list management meeting that's involved him. But if he can get to a situation where he shows he's healthy, he has changed his behaviour, he's prepared to play state league or train with a state league club, clubs are going to come with him, like, come for him. Well, what do you think? Like, in my heart of hearts, I think, God, we forgive pretty quickly. But clubs are desperate for talent and they're desperate to bring players in who can win them premierships.
They sure are. And, you know, Taron Thomas is a fairly rare talent at his best.
Yeah.
It is a human issue, though, and it's a societal issue. And he has shown his behaviour to be pretty poor. So he would need to be demonstrably better. And as you said, show us and show half of society, the women, who he has, who's over and over again committed these sort of, you know, pretty horrible things against. So, yeah, I mean, there's a long way to go. But as a footballer, why shouldn't he get another chance if he can demonstrate that, you know, he deserves a second or another chance?
And so we're splitting hairs and some people would say, well, you know, how bad are his acts? You know, were they, they're only over social media with a former partner. I don't think any of that matters. I believe that Taron Thomas should have to be out of football for a year, but clubs, they get seduced by talent. You saw with Geelong, with Tyson Stengel, who had, you know, drink driving issues, got found with cocaine, you know, nothing of that nature. But he came in, they took a chance on him. He was an All-Australian and helped win him a premiership.
Yeah.
So, you know, clubs see that reformation story, you know, they see that rehabilitation story and they see his talent and someone will get seduced by him and someone will have him on his list, I believe, next year.
And possibly it's the best thing for him because he has that structure around him and he has leadership and he has, you know, people are going to keep him in line. Whereas if he's just out there in society, that could be the worst possible, you know, outcome for a man like that.
And again, not to labour the point with North Melbourne, but they did the right thing. They've given him multiple chances and then they've sacked him. And so if it is that he is taken up by someone else, he's still on the list right now, but he will become a free agent. So they won't get any compensation for him as it is. You know, I wrote about Essendon with Sam Durham in the 2021 mid-season draft. So Durham was pick 9. North Melbourne went for Jacob Edwards, who never played, never looked like playing. So again, there's just so many of these reminders of special talents that North Melbourne miss out on or, you know, just chances they've missed. And all of those, you know, cumulatively add up to North Melbourne being exactly where they are right now. I've done the right thing with Taron. he's probably going to go and dominate with someone next year, and that's just their lot until they can somehow find a way to drag themselves back to relevance.
Absolutely. John Ralph, thanks for your time.
Cheers.
That'll do for us this week. My thanks to Sam Landsberger and John Ralph for joining me today. 5 days of footy is what we have to look forward to, so keep an eye out for our Supercoach live blogs of each game online. Plus, Mick McGuan will have his analysis on Thursday, the early tackle will be online Saturday afternoon, and of course, Robbo's can't miss tackle on Sunday night. Have a great week of footy. We'll catch you next week.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.